I'm Will Durst.
I'm going to give you a quick update on road closures in the KZFR listening area. In Chico, Canna Highway from Canna Pine Creek to the end, is all of these roads are flooded and closed. Wilson Landing Road between Carmen Lane and Meridian Road. River Road from Oro Ferry Road to Chico River Road. Folsom Street in the town of Nord. Also, West Sacramento between River Road and Meridian Road. There's a caution on Skyway at Inskip and Butte Meadows. The road is unpaved, and the word is stay off of it in Durham. It looks like Clear Creek Cemetery Road is closed off 199. Also, between Escalon Road and Oro Chico Highway. Also, Dunston Drive at LaPorte Road, Darby Road at Low Water Crossing, Nelson Road between Adobe and Highway 99, Oro Quincy Highway, and Canyon Creek Store is also flooded, and Dunston Drive between Avocado Road and Grubbs Road also closed. These are Oroville, Cottonwood Road between Table Mountain and Highway 99, and LaPorte Road between King Ranch Road and Pleasant Grove Lane. You can go to California Highway Patrol for updated road closure information. Please stay tuned for Butte Views and Beyond. Oh, no, not Butte Views and Beyond. The doctor's in.
I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, son, you look older than me. And I'm 71. You're falling apart. You're not living right.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Stay tuned for the Doctor's Inn.
That old inn crowd. Living's a battle, and you're losing the fight. The doctor, and the doctor said, boy, your body...
Hello, this is Ken Logan. I'm a family practice doctor here in Chico, and the Doctor's Inn. The Doctor's Inn is a program I do once a month to bring in guests and discuss subjects of concern or interest relative to the medical world and health. Welcome today. The opinions voiced on this show do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. Speaking of underwriters, the Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of you, the KZFR supporters, and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festival and events, including Artoberfest, Chico Paleo, the True North Tour, the Silent Film Festival, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn more about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by Walter Lucas, health insurance agent in Chico. Walter helps people turning 65 find Medicare supplement insurance, so you can see any doctor who accepts Medicare. Already have a Medicare supplement? You may save money and keep the same benefits with a different company. Call 893-0296 or at Walt Lucas, that's Walt Lucas, and Lucas is L-U-C-A-S, at sunset.net for a free consultation. Less stress, live better, Walter Lucas Insurance. Today's show is going to be about our availability of health care, and specifically health care insurance, the paying you as an individual, the paying for your health care in the upcoming future, specifically relative to the change of the person at the helm. In other words, when Trump becomes president. And I think this is important information for us all, whether you're older than 65 or younger with disability on Medicare, whether you're in a life situation where you're on Medi-Cal or the managed care that is run, that is contracted with Medi-Cal, or the private health insurances on your own, or via the Affordable Care Act. So these are some issues that we're going to discuss today with the potential, relative to the potential changes that may be coming up. And what I want you listeners to do is be able to hear how it may affect you as an individual, potentially. With me today, I have three guests who are experts in this information, which is complicated information, so thank goodness they're here today. The three people are Norma Wilcox. Hello, Norma.
Hi, Ken.
Forrest Harlan. Hello, Forrest.
Hello, Ken and audience.
And Paul O'Rourke Babb.
Hi, Ken. Good evening, everybody.
So, again, I think, like we were talking briefly before the show, my feeling about healthcare and the payment system, in other words, how we are able to pay for our own healthcare and therefore the availability that we have or do not have with our healthcare, is complicated. It's been complicated. And until we get a single-payer healthcare system, it's going to remain complicated. So it's of great concern to me that there may be some untoward changes ahead when Trump takes office. So I'm glad that you three guests are here today, and I'm anxious to hear some of the information you have for us and the advice. So, tell us about it. I think what I'm I want you listeners again to take to listen of the subject matters. Is it Medicare? Is it Affordable Care Act and private health insurance? Is it Medi-Cal? So they're going to be discussing these issues with us today. Let's listen.
Okay. I'm going to start off, and then Forrest and Paul can join me. I'm going to start off talking about Obamacare, because I think that's going to be the first thing that may be repealed.
And remember, Obamacare and Affordable Care Act are synonyms, same thing.
Yes. And as far as what it looks like, of course, we certainly don't know how it's going to end up, but here are some ideas of what people are talking about. So there are a couple of things that people really liked about the Affordable Care Act, and that one is that children up to 26 years of age could be on their parents' existing policy if the parents had enough money to have an insurance policy. And that may or may not remain. That's not sure at this point. The other thing is, for people with pre-existing conditions, such as cancer, chronic conditions, they were not able to get any kind of insurance. And under the Affordable Care Act, they were able to get an insurance policy, and it looks like they will not be able to continue with that. It looks like they're talking about a high-risk pool. And a high-risk pool is like auto insurance if you're in high risk, which means if you have chronic conditions, if you have some pre-existing conditions such as cancer, that you would be in this high-risk pool, which means you would be paying more. And then if at some point you can't pay, then you really would be out of luck. So that would be some of the major changes. The other parts that are not are very popular are the fines if you don't purchase it. And that would be eliminated. And then the mandates. And there is probably a fallout, and I'm going to let Forrest talk about the fallout of what would the results be from that.
Well, this is Forrest. The mandates are really a key part of the Affordable Care Act. I won't really personally call it Obamacare. I don't like the name. The mandates are the way in which everyone is required to participate, but it's a very coercive kind of tool.
Participate as in buy an insurance policy.
As in buying health insurance policy. Yes. Everyone is required upon the penalty of a fine for failing to participate by paying a fine if they do not choose to get a policy, and then you still don't have insurance. But if the mandate is removed, then we start having the complete unraveling of the entire Affordable Care Act. I've seen some articles recently in the last week that have talked about some people have advocated that they can keep the good parts of the Affordable Care Act and just get rid of the unpopular parts. But truth be told, this whole law was so carefully constructed, and I would say jury-rigged, to satisfy the needs of the insurance company first and foremost, and secondarily to provide more people with health care. And even with that kind of coercive tool, there are still 30 million people who are not covered yet by the Affordable Care Act. So we covered 20 million more, but we did it at a very high price. And if the mandate is removed, then the healthy young will be disincentivized to participate, and the elderly will be in a situation where they may end up in either the high-risk pool or a very expensive type of Medicare, but it's going to be that would be very different than the current even Medicare system. So I think the mandate is probably going to go, I think, and that will be, I think, the actual death knell of the entire Affordable Care Act, because the insurance plans will withdraw, I would believe, at that point.
Yeah, and just so the listeners will understand, the mandate, what that means is if you don't have a health insurance policy, you had to buy one. You had to get a contract with your insurance company for your health care or be fined in taxes.
Right.
The reason that it has worked with the reason it was in the Affordable Care Act is so that the large pool of people who are purchasing health insurance include those who are healthy and young, et cetera.
Right. We have to be, in some sense, it's an attempt to bring everybody into the pool, but it's still a multi-payer system and
yes.
carries all the inefficiencies of the,
yes.
the status quo. But on the other hand, it creates resentments among the body politic.
Oh, yeah.
And it's this resentment that's building up that I think is leading to a serious backlash. And I'm a member of the Democratic Party, but I've been very critical of what the Democratic Party did in forming the Affordable Care Act, in that they set up something that, instead of increasing the people's interest in that type of politics, they actually set up a system that would, we know, health policy experts know, that would eventually create resentment and backlash. And we're seeing that now, I believe.
Yeah. Let me just finish up a little bit about the mandate. I mean, the reason for the mandate and having all people participating by purchasing insurance policy, when you bring in to the mix of people that are having the insurance policy, those who are healthy, then the cost to the insurance companies is lessened overall. And if we just have people who are not healthy in the purchasing insurance policies, then the insurance company is going to pay more. So, I mean, there's going to be more out of their pocket. So that was the idea, so that the burden to the insurance companies was kind of eased by having the mandate that included these healthy people as well. Into that pool of people with insurance policies.
So I just want to touch briefly on where this resentment may be most focused. Clearly, the people who are on Medi-Cal who had no health access have done fairly well under the Affordable Care Act. I work
yes.
a lot with Medi-Cal insurance plans as a consumer advocate, and I'm well aware of the policies of the companies that set up the funding stream so that Dr. Ken Logan and other physicians and clinic administrators can give the health care to these people. But the people right above the subsidy line who are not eligible for Medicaid, Medi-Cal, those people are being hit really hard with,
yes.
with these high premiums, high deductibles,
yes.
and basically they end up being the ones that are stretched well more than they ought to be, and it really puts a lie to the name Affordable Care Act.
Absolutely.
They're not getting it to be affordable, and there's not much care that you can get when you can't afford the deductible.
Totally agree. And like you said, that's the people just above the income level where they would be eligible for Medi-Cal. In other words, they're not making a lot of money, let's say, but they're mandated to have an insurance policy with a high deductible and co-pays, et cetera. We use the term in the business, as you all, we all know, underinsured. Those are some of the patients that we see at the Shalom Free Clinic. As a matter of fact, that's a lot of the patients we see at the Shalom Free Clinic currently. And like you said, though, the part of the Affordable Care Act did include adding a few million, is that true? 4.6 million Californians were added to the rolls of the Medi-Cal, which was a good move. Then they at least had Medi-Cal health insurance and could see me at, or someone else at Ampla Health or, you know, community health center.
Yeah, just to finish, I want to give Paul some time, too.
Yeah.
One-third of Californians are on Medi-Cal. We need to keep that in mind. That's a serious
wow.
chunk of the population.
Yeah, that's a giant number. And I'm going to back up just a
this
bit.
Is Paul, that's Paul talking now.
Paul O'Rourke Babb, family nurse practitioner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm going to back up just a bit and throw out a few numbers, but also continuing this conversation about the Affordable Care Act and some of the things that we might see happen and what people did and didn't like about it. The Kaiser Family Foundation just released a study not very long ago. I don't have the exact date, but within the last couple of months, looking at a poll that they did based on the election and people's feelings about what should happen with the Affordable Care Act. And the numbers are real telling. What Norma was saying about the popular parts of the ACA, we're talking about particularly popular. For example, the number of adults that they surveyed, and this was based on a question that they posed rather than on election polling, which is different in terms of its content. And that is that the part that allows young people to stay on their parents' insurance policy, and I really appreciate that you said if their parents can't afford to buy a policy, because that's a huge issue and one that we will see, particularly among people who have insurance through their employers. And I'll come back to that number in just a minute. Among the people that they polled, 85% of the people said that they favored continuing that.
Continuing the Affordable Care
85% continuing that portion of the Affordable Care
Where, the 26-year-old child can be on their insurance policy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And the important distinction for the Kaiser Family Foundation's survey is that they chose to focus on policy issues rather than rhetorical issues, which most of the polls are, where you find a whole lot more opposition to what people think the Affordable Care Act is as opposed to the policies that it implemented. Another number to keep in mind, 83% favored continuing to eliminate the out-of-pocket costs for many preventive services.
Mm-hmm.
And as you go down through the line of the things in the Affordable Care Act that people supported, the numbers really don't drop below 70% until you get to this issue of the mandate. And that drops precipitously down to 39%. Most people really are bothered by that. And I will posit that the reason that they're bothered by it is not the fact so much that it's a mandate as that it's an unaffordable mandate and that you are further penalized if you're not able to afford that mandate. And it's particularly the fines that people protest. Now, interestingly, in this, they took polls of people and distinguished their political preferences. And the really surprising numbers here, maybe to some, is 83% of Trump supporters favor continuing to allow young adults to remain on their parents' policies. 72% of Trump supporters favor creating exchanges where small businesses and people can shop for insurance and compare prices and benefits. 71% of Trump supporters favor continuing to close the Medicare prescription drug costs. just to throw out a couple of numbers about what we're talking about, in 2016, the United States spent $3.4 trillion dollars on health care, at the same time leaving more than 30 million people completely uninsured, and the numbers vary depending on whose reviews you look at, but most of the business reviews say another 21% of underinsured. So 21 million. So a huge number of people who either have insurance that they really can't use, and they forego care because of that, or people who just don't have any insurance at all. A couple of other things that I want to point out, going back to the issue of the pre-existing condition part of the ACA, which may be at risk. And I have to say that one of the things that's being floated right now by Senator Ryan is throwing the ACA and Medicare together in the legislation. So when they repeal the ACA, they will also repeal Medicare as a public program. If you sort of think about that for a minute and you consider the failure of our corporate media in this country and what they will focus on, the fanfare will be over the ACA because it's got advertising dollars, because it's a very controversial subject. So if they slide Medicare through on this, we could end up without Medicare at the same time that we end up without the Affordable Care Act. So we're in a very, I think, dangerous place right now, but also a very effective place in terms of organizing for what I think all of us would agree, a real, rational, scientifically proven, universally used around the world system, which is a single-payer, publicly financed system. 30% of the dollars that we spend, those $3.4 trillion that we spend in the United States, are spent on administrative overhead. That's duplication. That's multiple layers of benefits managers. That's overpayments to insurance and to pharmaceutical companies for managing people's benefits. Has nothing to do with clinical care, that relationship between Dr. Logan and me as a patient, between your nurse practitioner and you as a patient, and between your children and their pediatricians. There is an executive who just made a film called Fix It, and he has another film coming out as a follow-up. This is a man who is the CEO of MCS Industries, which makes picture frames and decorative mirrors, and they're based in New Mexico. Made this film that focuses on the business aspects of this. Part of what he did when he made this film was he went to Taiwan, which instituted a universal system very recently, and found out that their administrative overhead runs 1.6%.
Wow. Low.
By any figures, we know that that $3.4 trillion is so much money that if we were simply to get rid of the majority of the administrative costs, which we could do if we had a rational single-payer system, would pay for everyone who is not insured right now. Do nothing else.
You think about that, at $3.1 trillion we spend on medical care, and 30% of that, that's almost $1 trillion.
Yeah.
Spent on administrative stuff, quagmire stuff.
Quagmire
not,
stuff.
Not healthcare.
Duplication stuff. Costs to every practice in this country in having to have people who argue back and forth on the phone and through the mail.
To try to prevent you from getting what your doctor has ordered.
Paid once the care has taken place. Another issue that I want to throw out, and this is because the other thing that is truly at risk right now is Medicaid programs, because the Republicans have long said that they would like to cut way back on Medicaid disbursements.
And Medicaid is, in this state, Medi-Cal.
Yes.
So, okay.
And one issue with that is that that puts all of the people who recently have been able to get the Affordable Care Act insurance back at risk again, because they will be the mm-hmm. first ones thrown back off their insurance as mm-hmm. Medicaid beneficiaries. Equally as important, one of the things that's happened as employer-sponsored health premiums have gone up and become more and more unaffordable to families is families have chosen, whoever's working and gets the insurance, have chosen to insure their spouse through their company insurance and their children through public insurance, through Medicaid. So those people are also at risk.
I'd like to chime in to what you said, Paul, about the administrative costs. And one of the parts of the administrative costs is the amount of money that we pay as consumers in our premiums goes to the top executives, the CEOs of the insurance companies. And they are making millions of dollars per year. And we're talking about in the high teens to the mid-20s. And all of them, every single insurance company, their CEOs are making that. And that money comes from us, the consumers. So we are paying them. And so that's where a lot of our insurance money goes.
And that 30% you talked about administrative costs, out of that $3.1 trillion that we spend, does that include the profit to the insurance companies as well?
That includes the profit, but a big portion of it simply is paperwork.
Yeah. Yeah, the reason I bring up the profit is that the insurance companies are always, it's profit-oriented. They're always, their profits are rising, not lowering. As our healthcare availability for you and me goes down, their profits still go up.
And you know, sometimes you will hear from people who are apologists for the private insurance industry saying that a big part of the costs in the United States are what physicians and other clinicians in this country make, which is untrue compared to countries like Canada and France and Sweden and others who insure all of their people as comparative incomes. But also sort of clouds over the issue that one of the very large portions of that huge $3.4 trillion cost is the cost of medications, of pharmaceuticals and of medical devices, but particularly pharmaceuticals. And to go back to what you were saying, Ken, about profitability, the pharmaceutical companies in this country make twice what any other corporate entity in this country makes in terms of profit margins.
Wow. And we don't have the collective bargaining to assure some lowering of those prices. They're just going up. We have no ability to bargain them down when we don't have collective bargaining, such as we would have with the ability if we had a single-payer system.
Yeah, and I'd like to comment, too, about the changes with the Affordable Care Act. And so if the mandates are released, they're repealed, and the subsidies are repealed, then we have this whole pool of young, healthy people who will probably not continue. And the ones who have the subsidies who can't afford, they will not be a part of it. So what happens with the people who are left are the premiums will rise, the amount of care will decrease, and a lot of the insurance companies will leave. They will leave as they have been. When they can't make the amount of profit, they are...
The insurance pool that's part of the Affordable Care Act, yeah.
Right. So that could lead to the whole collapse.
Yeah.
Because we have to remember that the insurance companies that are for profit, that is their goal. And if they can't make the amount of profit that they want, then they will be pulling out.
So when these we have Republican Congress, we have a Republican coming into presidency. So I'm kind of thinking out loud here that it's kind of a slam dunk that the maybe, that the Affordable Care Act will be repealed in some fashion. Do we know what is going to take its place? Anything? Nothing?
Nope. We don't know, but we can guess. We can see the outlines of what might happen. We've already seen a massive merger mania take place among the insurance companies. So in most parts of the country, there are usually two companies that are still actually operational in the private health insurance market. Some markets have a bit more. LA has several, but we don't have that many up here. So if we end up with a situation where you have three or two insurance companies, you effectively have a monopoly. And as another very famous health activist, physician, Dr. Margaret Flowers, said recently, this is not the single-payer system we were working for all these years, that we may end up getting a single payer, but it might be one insurance company that dictates all the rules of engagement. So I think it's really so. Speak up, number two.
Well, okay. If I could
go ahead,
sort
Paul.
Of add to that, because I just recently got back from Washington, D.C. I belong to the Physicians for National Health program, and we had our national conference in Washington, D.C. This year, and Margaret spoke on that subject there. But in 2016, even with the Affordable Care Act, the average family of four in the United States spent $23,000 a year on health insurance. Not on health care, on health insurance. They may have spent money on health care in addition to that. But we're talking about something, you know, they throw these terms out called the burden of providing insurance and the affordability of providing insurance. Well, I just want people to sort of dial down a number like that to know what we're actually talking about and what affordability might be. If you're a small business owner and you've got to put $23,000 out to keep your kids and yourself insured, you can imagine the strain that might put on your small business. The other thing that I want to come back to what both of you touched on, but Norma in particular, is one of the things that I think we need to watch for. And my answer to will it be repealed? I think it will be repealed, but it will be repealed carefully and in a political way. The Republicans know there are midterms in 2 years. They don't plan on doing anything to health care that is going to be so outrageous they could all be out of jobs in 2 years if they can avoid that. So their political game is going to be to try to get us to swallow something for 2 years until they keep their seats and then get rid of the rest of it. And typically what they'll do is they'll pick on the people least able to defend themselves, and they'll take advantage of the people who are griping about what we got now, which are the people in middle incomes who really can't afford the insurance they're buying, but they can buy it. One of the really big things that's going to happen, I think, that's real important to watch, though, is this idea of the prior existing condition and that part of the ACA, because I think we have some real concrete data that we can look at in terms of how the insurance companies will respond to this. And that is a study that was done by Francesco De Carolis and Andrea Guglielmo last month, that took a look at how insurance companies decided to deal with risk pooling. And it's a very interesting study, because how they dealt with getting a higher risk pool of customers, is the way they like to call us all, is by lowering their premiums, which got them more business, because people said, oh, cheaper insurance, I guess I'll get some. And this is a Medicare Advantage system that we're looking at now. This is the privatization of Medicare. This is the direction that we could go. So they lowered their premiums, so they got more customers, and then they raised their deductibles, their out-of-pocket, their tier system for medications, all of the other costs that you and I, who just bought that lower premium policy, have to pay for, but allowed them to stay in business and make a profit.
And
that's a Medicare Advantage model that's actually happened, and I think we can look at that to see how the Republicans may tweak the ACA and Medicaid as well.
Health insurance companies win, the people lose. Hey, let's take a little break, and we'll be back in a minute to hear more. Mm-hmm. Hello, you're listening to KZFR 90.1 radio, and this is Ken Logan, Dr. Ken Logan, and the Doctor's Inn. Today we're talking about some of the potential changes that may be afoot when Trump takes office in January, relative to some of the programs that we have in this country relative to our health care. And speaking here in the studio today with me, the guests are Norma Wilcox. Hello, Norma.
Hi there, Ken.
Forrest Harlan. Hello, Forrest.
Hello.
And Paul O'Rourke Babb. Hi, Paul.
Good evening.
So, can
let's continue. Yeah, Norma has a point to make, then I want to speak a bit about macroeconomics and healthcare.
2 points, Norma.
Yes. 1 point is to repeal the Medicaid expansion and the
Medicaid expansion means the Medi-Cal expansion that we had with the Affordable Care Act.
Yes. And also the state exchanges. That would take an act of Congress. So that could not just be a quick thing that Trump could just sign off on. And so that would take some debate. But the unfortunate thing is that the Republicans do now have the votes in the Congress and in the Senate. So that's the bad news. The other part is for the people who have pre-existing conditions, and if they lose their subsidies, or other people losing their subsidies.
Subsidies for their health care premium.
Yes. Uh-huh. They would be offered a tax credit. But you have to earn enough money to even pay taxes to get a tax credit. So,
yeah, so it wouldn't be very beneficial to many of them.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
It would just be a political noise only.
Yes, absolutely.
And I wanted to say a couple things about what the promise was made back in 2009 and 10 that has not been very well realized. We were promised way back when in the day, in the early years of the Obama administration, that the Affordable Care Act would really greatly reduce the number of bankruptcies due to medical conditions. I think some of us already were paying attention, but most people were not, but we already had the same basic scheme in place in Massachusetts in 2006, which is still in place, and what happened in Massachusetts is exactly what's happening here, that there was a very, 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 very tiny little drop in the rate of bankruptcies, but it came at a high cost to the U.S. Treasury and the taxpayers, us, because that was all subsidized money. So we got a little tiny firecracker for a big investment of money, and that wasn't really all that helpful.
What do you mean bankruptcy? You mean people go bankrupt because of their health care?
Well, it's been well known, it has not changed yet, that of all the bankruptcies that occur, 62% were occurring because of medical expenses, and 75% of those people had health insurance. That has not changed.
Say that one more time. In the United States of America,
62% of people who do go bankrupt do so because of medical bills. And 75% of those people had insurance. Ooh. Now, that has not changed. That was true in 2000. It was true in 2010. It's still true in 2016.
You mean having health insurance doesn't necessarily mean I'm not going to go bankrupt?
No. It's like
75%
of like
that,
if you're walking out in the snow and all you have to wear is a hospital gown that's open in the back, it's like that kind of coverage. So it doesn't do anything in terms of protection, and it does a lot of cost to the Treasury. The other promise that was made was that we would have better access to health care. Well, Physicians for a National Health Program last month published a paper that showed that the U.S. is still last place in access to health care overall.
Compared to the other countries of the world.
Compared to every other developed country in the world. Mm-hmm. The Organization of Economic Development and Cooperation rates us as 28th out of 30 countries for quality of health care.
In the United States of America.
This is our country, for better or for worse. So I want to then talk briefly about how that actually leads into this perception that the Affordable Care Act has not done much. And I'd say we can, among ourselves, say that it's done some good, but it's not done what it's promised to do, and that is part of why the resentment builds up, because people are not getting what they were promised. Videotape is available of President Obama back in 2008 and 2009 promising certain aspects of the Affordable Care Act, which I think it was known to be not true at the time, but certainly has borne out the evidence in the early collection of data, is that we're still in a pickle, and it's still costing us $1 trillion a year. And my contention all along has been, I would rather save $400 billion, which is what single payer would be shown to save in numerous studies, versus spending $1 trillion a year. So, yes, we can afford $1 trillion a year over 10 years. We have a big treasury. But on the other hand, why aren't we saving $400 billion a year instead of spending $1 trillion a year on that? So, so I think it's time to move on to maybe some more hopeful messages. I think we've had things seem kind of dire. People are all very scared of this impending Trump administration, and with good reason, I would say. But let's remember that we live in a very special place. California did not go the way the rest of the country went in the last election last month. We got more Democratic. We got more progressive, even in two Democrat seats because of our top two systems. We have two Democrats in certain districts running against each other in the general election. Progressives who had a clear progressive statement of their principles and what they intended to do did very well in the general election, and we actually moved the legislature in a slightly more progressive manner while achieving an overall two-thirds majority in both houses. So that gives us some operating room to kind of actually, again, become a leader for the next generation of political development, so that we can see maybe 10, 20 years from now, when I'm really old, that we might actually get to our goal, and that's what I'd like to do. So California single-payer movement went into a bit of a quiet period, shall we say, after the passage of the Affordable Care Act. Many, many Democrats who were sympathetic to our cause were telling us, let's just wait until we'll see what the Affordable Care Act does.
I want you to succinctly explain to the listeners what single-payer health care means.
Okay, well, single-payer health care means that the government is the financial payer for all necessary medical costs, which is what Medicare is, and what the Canadian health care system is, and what they have in other countries of the world, like Taiwan, which we mentioned, Japan. Many other countries have a single-payer system. It's one of the two types of scheme that can lead to universal health care. The other one is a regulated utility. So the single-payer system actually allows more freedom for the doctors and does not encourage managed care type systems that tend to restrict care in some key points. And the single-payer system leaves the medical decisions up to the physician and the patient.
So the management of the money, the collector of the money, would not be insurance private, for-profit insurance
companies?
There
would be no private for-profit insurance companies. That's where our savings would come from.
Our dollars for our premiums, let's say, which would actually be taxes, but we wouldn't have premiums. We would pay our taxes appropriately, and that would go into a fund, and then that's how our health care would be paid to doctors, laboratories, hospitals, et cetera.
And that's when Paul says 62% of us, of our health care costs, are already being covered by that, and that would, in effect, be more than enough to cover everybody better, including vision and dental and other types of integrated health care would be covered with the same amount of money already being spent.
And you're telling me that that's how it is and that's how it's working for universal, everybody having health care in the other industrialized countries.
Every other industrialized country has universal health care, but it's...
So they don't have a large portion of their population
insured.
Underinsured.
Nobody goes bankrupt in other countries
because
of medical expenses. Nobody has to wait and delay care. When they feel ill, they can just go see a doctor without worrying about what it's going to cost. So the other point to remember is that under single-payer systems, that it's absolutely, the doctors have the freedom to operate. They can be in a single practice if they want, or they can be in large groups if they choose, but they have the freedom to actually prescribe to see number, as many patients as they want. They have, people have the right to choose any physician. Physicians have a right to regulate their own practice, and they're not driven to just fight
insurance
half of the patients. My physician friends I know tell me that they spend half of their time fighting for patient meds and patient care, and they're still dealing with insurance companies. So denial of care is still alive and well with private insurance. So single payer removes all those barriers to care, including barriers to affordability.
You mean, and Dr. Logan could open up his private practice
Dr.
again?
Dr. Logan could go back into private practice and yeah. not be forced to work for a federally qualified healthcare clinic.
Yeah, and you know, I want you to all hear that. That's the reason I closed, is because of the fight with insurance companies for payment.
Yes, when we first met you, you were in private practice.
Yeah, I would still be in private practice if we had single payer healthcare.
Okay, I see we're getting into close top of the hour. Let's talk about good things. We've mentioned that California is a special place, and part of the reason is that California not only has a much more progressive political place to come from, we have been allowed to expose ourselves to different people, different groups of people, so the prejudice is not as high, and we have a more social cohesion in California than other places where clearly racism is rampant. But one of the drawbacks in California, because I mentioned earlier that the single-payer movement went kind of quiet after the passage of the ACA, Affordable Care Act.
Because here in California, we had, give them a little history on that, Senator Kuhl
okay, well,
and all that.
We've been there. Way back in the last decade, we mm-hmm. actually did pass a single-payer bill in both houses of the state legislature, and it was vetoed in both cases by Governor Schwarzenegger.
So
we already have the bill. Basically, the structure is already well-researched, well-studied. We really just need one more California-based study to update the economics of the plan. But every other study has shown great savings with the single-payer.
So I'm just going to repeat that, listeners. So over the last 10 years, our legislature in the state of California has passed two times a single-payer system for California. When it got to the governor's desk both times, it was vetoed. That was Arnold Schwarzenegger when he was governor. So that's interesting to know that we've already attempted this, and we thought it was a good idea then,
and
our representatives did.
And other states have also come very close to passing a bill. Vermont came the closest, but other states have passed bills that have not quite gotten all the way there.
Mm-hmm.
Colorado had a recent statewide initiative that in the election of last month that failed quite substantially. So we've seen that every time it goes to the ballot, the pharmaceutical and medical industry
yeah.
has so much resources.
Oh, yeah.
With the Citizens United decision and a couple other McCutcheon versus FEC, those decisions have made it impossible to get much of anything done because the resistance will just overwhelm any progressive initiative that goes to a statewide ballot.
Pharmaceutical companies and private health insurance companies have multi-$1 billion to spend on.
So what can we do?
Information out to the public.
So one thing we can do is a single-payer movement can stop the infighting. The single-payer movement did kind of fracture about 4 years ago, and the advocates that wanted to push just for single-payer health reform didn't really any longer see eye to eye with some of the more incrementalist type groups that want to take on other issues. I would mention Access Health has done a really good job of getting the undocumented population covered. They've succeeded in getting the 0 to 19 age group covered, and they're on the verge in this next session of the California legislature of covering the entire population of undocumented California residents. That would be a good thing because
relative to Medicare, Medi-Cal.
Medi-Cal and the exchange.
And the exchange. Okay.
So they can enter the market and they can't just get the subsidies.
Mm-hmm.
But even this is significant. But they weren't willing to stand with us strongly for single payers. So what that means is that just last month, there was a meeting held in Oakland sponsored by the California Nurse Association, National Nurses United, that I was privileged to attend. There were many, many groups represented. There were like 20 members of our statewide group, Healthcare for All California. And what was done at that meeting was that there was a memorandum of understanding signed that all the single-payer advocates would actually stand together and we would form a collaborative. So we maintain our separate identities, but we would now form a collaborative called a Medicare for All Collaborative of California.
So single-payer health care, another way of saying that would be improved Medicare for all.
Yes, and that's okay. Also the focus of John Conyers, Representative Conyers bill HR 676, is that it would be able to improve Medicare, because Medicare has some problems. Medicare is not a perfect health care system. So what we want to say in California is that if we pull together and present a united front of a collaborative that works together, that's been one of the main things that's kept us back from having a bill and an author. We have the bill, we just haven't had the author the last two sessions. And we would be able to, I believe, be much more successful at getting an author, especially with the threat of massive changes and cuts from Republicans. This may actually scare people into coming on board our movement, and also the governor and responsible legislators do not want to see millions of people thrown off of health care altogether. So we're thinking this is the opportunity part, is to be united as a movement and to also be able to take this threat and turn it into an opportunity for a further organization. There are many people who are talking to Norma and myself and other known activists trying to promote the idea that we want to not mourn, we want to organize, and to, if you're feeling scared, join the Butte County Healthcare Coalition. If you're a medical professional, join the Physicians for National Health Program and the California Physicians Alliance groups that are representing professionals in the field.
If people were interested in joining the Butte County Healthcare Coalition, which favors single-payer and supports single-payer healthcare, how could they? Is there a phone number?
Yes, there is, but I would say most people are now have Facebook connections, and I would urge them to go to the Facebook page, which is titled, strangely enough, Butte County Healthcare Coalition, and that's where I have information. We have annual meetings for our membership, and that will be taking place next month, and the information is all on the Facebook page. If you have a piece of paper and pencil and you're ready to write, you can call 896-1609 and leave a message there, and we'll call you back.
What's the number again?
896-1609.
And if you're clinicians and you're listening, then you can go to the web and go to CAPA, CaliforniaPhysicians Alliance.org, and you can on there click the Butte County chapter of that, and you can also go to PNHP.org, which is the Physicians for National Health Program, and you will also find California chapter representatives that you can get in touch with. And included in that is if you want to be able to invite people to speak on this issue, that's a good place to get excellent speakers and excellent information. I also want to throw out, if you haven't seen the movie Fix It, it's available on YouTube and Vimeo. It's very easy to see. Have a house party, and if you, particularly if you're a small business owner, look at this, because this man did a documentary that really outlines the idea of a tax-supported universal public system, also from a business perspective, and it just adds the element of economics to what's a very strong moral argument.
Yeah.
Also, for the Butte County Healthcare Coalition, the annual meeting that Forrest mentioned is January 22nd, which is a Sunday, and it is going to be held at Valley Oaks Village, and it is from 1:45. So just show up if you're interested. We're going to be showing a new film called Now Is the Time, Healthcare for Everybody.
So both films are really valuable. The one that Paul mentioned, Fix It, really puts a highlight on the business aspect and why healthcare costs are the main driver in labor strife, and why people are keep getting bad contracts that have no benefits. And Now Is the Time just got finished basically last week, and we have an advanced copy that we just received. We're going to be showing that film at the meeting, and that has a little more personal focus, but highlights a lot of the contradictions in the Affordable Care Act and why we have to do better.
Thank you so much, Norma Wilcox, Forrest Harlan, Paula Ruckbab on updating us on potential changes in our healthcare system in the near future. And thanks to Ray Lager, the engineer for this show. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of you, the KZFR supporters, and by Mary's Gone Crackers, manufacturing award-winning gluten-free and certified organic and vegan crackers, pretzels, and cookies in their own dedicated gluten-free facility in Gridley, California. Their products are allergy-friendly and can be found in grocery and health food stores throughout the United States and Canada. More information at Mary's, that's M-A-R-Y-S, gonecrackers.com or phone 888-258-1250. And by the Pita Pit, locally owned and operated in downtown Chico at 240 Broadway since 2004. The Pita Pit features a variety of fresh Mediterranean, Greek, and American foods, including pita wraps, falafels, gyros, and deli favorites, all made to order. Pita Pit is open 7 days a week, with catering and delivery available by calling 899-2847. The opinions voiced on this show don't necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers, but it was still great information nonetheless. Stay tuned for Beetle Nation. See you next month.